This is an ABC Radio National podcast, and we have many more to choose from, which you can hear details about after this program. But right now, we hope you enjoy this podcast.
Hello, I'm Prithvi Ratharajan with Lingua Franca here on ABC Radio National. And this is the second episode of a four-part series on constructed languages. This week on Klingon, which is named after the creatures depicted as hostile aliens in the long-running TV series Star Trek. A Klingon battlecruiser attacking an unidentified alien force. Mark Okrand is the linguist who invented the Klingon language used in Star Trek, the popularity of which has spawned an international following. So Mark, tell us, who uses Klingon? And I mean both on and off screen.
Well, on the screen it's used by the Klingons primarily. You know, the Star Trek aliens have been around since the late 60s with the original TV series, although on the TV series they never spoke their own language. They referred to it, but they never spoke it. You know, we first heard it in the first movie, Star Trek The Motion Picture, which I did not work on. I entered the Star Trek world after that. On Earth, however, at least 21st century Earth, it's spoken by people all over the world who are interested in the language or interested in Star Trek and have developed their own little speech community.
And why would people want to speak Klingon to each other in real life, as fans of it do?
For fun is the short answer, I think. The people I know who speak Klingon have a great time doing it. They're playing word games and things like that and laughing hysterically at the jokes that they're making. If you don't know Klingon, you don't get the joke. But if you do know Klingon, it's very, very funny. So I think they have a good time with it. The fact that it's Klingons, too, is interesting to those who are, you know, particularly interested in Klingon culture. There are people who dress up as Klingons and go around and say Klingon things, and so on and so forth, although the people who study Klingon most intensely generally don't dress up as Klingons. They study the language in the same way they would study any natural human language. But the ones who do get into playing Klingon characters have much more fun doing it, speaking their own language, because, again, that sets them apart from the non-Klingons. We are Klingons, and we have our own language and culture, and I'm going to prove it to you by spitting this stuff at you. That means, can you speak Klingon?
It's a resounding no from my end.
It is Robert.
And Mark, when were you called on to invent Klingon and why?
Well, I was called on to invent Klingon for the third Star Trek picture, Star Trek The Search for Spock. But I was called on to do that because I'd created Vulcan for the second Star Trek picture. So it made sense, I guess, from their point of view, from the studio's point of view, when they were putting the picture together and they decided that there was going to be a Klingon language, to call on me because I was the one who did the language right before. So I didn't create Klingon and then go to the studio and say, hey, here's this language, you ought to put it in the movie. It was the idea of Harv Bennett, who was the writer and the producer of the third picture, who thought there ought to be a Klingon language, and he's the one who hired me to do it.
And I think you worked with six lines of a language that an actor had made up in the first film, is that right?
Right. Klingon originated not by me. It was originally heard in Star Trek The Motion Picture, which was Star Trek One, if you want to call it that. At the very, very beginning of the film, that you see three Klingon ships, and you see inside of one of them, and there's the Klingon captain or commander, whatever his rank is, and he's barking out commands and orders now and again in this strange language. And that's the first time we've heard Klingon. It's subtitled, therefore it's real. And there's about half a dozen lines like that. And those lines were made up by the actor James Doohan, who played Scotty. And they were spoken by a guy named, the actor is named Mark Leonard. And that was the start. And what exactly Jimmy Doohan had in mind when he made these lines up, I'm not sure. I know he wanted it to sound strange and otherworldly. I don't know what he had in mind in terms of vocabulary or grammar or anything like that, because all we've got is those half a dozen lines. And actually, there's a lot more than that, except you can't really hear it. There's a scene in the picture where they're on a Federation observation station or something like that. And you see a Klingon on a view screen, and he's jabbering away in Klingon. But you can't really hear him because the Federation people are talking English much louder than he is. So I don't know what that's all about. But the six lines that are subtitled form the basis of what I did. So I listened to those six lines and wrote them down as best I could and imposed a grammatical structure on them because I knew what they meant because there was a subtitle and I would have to decide, okay, this phrase is three syllables. Is that one word or two words or three words? And if it's two words, is it two syllables and then one or one syllable and then two? And I just made arbitrary decisions based on nothing, just to decide to do something just to get going on it. And that was the start.
That must have been really exciting, birthing that language, so to speak.
It was. I mean, it was fun to do, fun to work with the actors and see them speak the lines and memorize them. And the crew, the people working on the film, were very, very interested in all of this stuff, and they took it very seriously. Leonard Nimoy, who was the director for Star Trek III, you know, when they shoot a movie, at the end of every scene, the director yells, "Cut!" And then he asks the person in charge of photography, "Was that okay for you?" He asks the sound person, "Was that okay for you?" And in this case, he would ask me if there was Klingon speaking in that particular scene, you know, "Was that okay for you?" And if it didn't sound good, I would say no. I learned very quickly not to say no very often because shooting scenes over again is very expensive. So if it sounded good to me, even if it wasn't exactly what I wanted them to say, I would say, yes, it's fine, and then I would take notes. So, for example, if the actor said toe rather than two, I'd say, yeah, that sounds fine. That's legitimate Klingon, even though it's not what I wanted. But I would make a note that this word is now toe. It's not two anymore. So the next time it came up, I would make sure they said toe, so it would match.
That sounds like collaborative language creation.
It was. It's a very interesting form of language change.
And why does Klingon sound so guttural?
Two reasons. Actually, the primary reason is because the script called for it. In the script for Star Trek III, the way I knew which lines were supposed to be in Klingon and which lines were supposed to be in English, because the Klingons sometimes spoke Klingon and sometimes spoke English, and in the script, if they were speaking Klingon, the English translation would be in parentheses. But every once in a while in the script, it would actually say, so-and-so, the character, says, in his guttural Klingon. I said, oh, if the script says Klingon is guttural, then I guess it's guttural because the script, you know, drives everything. So I added some guttural sounds in there. I added the ch and the kh and a few other things in there to give it that guttural sound. So that's one reason. The other reason is that the cultural perception that we in America have anyway, and it was the film was made in America and it was written by Americans and so forth. Is that guttural sounds are associated somehow or other with heaviness or evilness, maybe. So it made sense for the bad guys to be speaking in this guttural way because that's what bad guys sound like. That's, you know, that's totally a cultural perception. It has nothing to do with anything. A sound is a sound. There's no sound that's intrinsically good, bad, or anything else. But different cultures have different notions about this sort of thing, and that's one of the notions floating around here, so that was incorporated for that reason.
So does it still feel like something that you invented?
Yeah. Rightly or wrongly, nobody changes it unless I say it's okay or tell them how to go about changing it, so people don't introduce new words, they don't introduce new points of grammar. They ask me to, and they're all very, very mad at me because I'm very sluggish about coming up with new stuff. There's enough grammatical structure, enough grammatical apparatus that you can put words together in various ways to come up with compound words, bigger words, and create all kinds of things. The speakers of Klingon argue a lot about, you know, does this sentence work this way or that way, and what do you do with this pronoun, and how do you express this sort of notion, and they have different ideas, but they don't invent any new things. One of these days, obviously, that's not going to be the case. Assuming that people keep speaking Klingon, you know, a day will come at some point where I'm not going to be around to do this. Whether I should be doing it right now or not is a separate discussion. But I am. But someday I won't. And at that point, I think it'll take on more of a life of its own because then you will have people kind of going off in different ways. And some people in one country say we'll do it one way and people in another country will do it another way. I've already heard differences in Klingon, different pronunciations. There was one Kepholm, one convention of the Klingon Language Institute that took place in Brussels, which was the first time it was outside of the United States. This is several years ago. And there were speakers from a number of European countries, and they didn't speak Klingon in terms of the sounds, you know, quite the same way that the Americans did.
So that was kind of a dialect of Klingon.
Exactly, exactly. And in fact, there was one of these Capcoms was in, I think it was the one in Las Vegas, which was a very strange place to have one of these meetings. But anyway, we were there and people were talking and someone came in and started speaking Klingon. No one had ever seen him before, but he started speaking Klingon with a distinct Australian accent. And everyone kind of looked at him and knew exactly who he was. It was someone who they all knew from emails and stuff like that, but no one had ever met before, but they didn't know of anyone else in Australia at the time who might be able to speak Klingon so well. And they were right. They guessed who it was.
That's really funny. There's a translation of Hamlet in Klingon, first published in 1996. Shakespeare reputedly had a vocabulary far larger than the average English speaker. So are there enough words in Klingon for a good translation of Shakespeare?
The short answer is yes, because it's a brilliant translation of Shakespeare, actually, I think. The reason there's a translation at all is because there's a scene in Star Trek VI where the Federation folks and some representatives of the Klingon Empire are having dinner together in hopes of getting along in the future, which of course doesn't work out. And the leader of the Klingon Empire proposes a toast, and he says, "To the undiscovered country." And everyone kind of looks blank, you know, what's that all about? And Mr. Spock, who of course knows everything, says, you know, "Hamlet, Act 4, Scene 2, or whatever he says, because that's part of the to be or not to be speech, that phrase, the undiscovered country. And at that point, the leader of the Klingon Empire says, "You can't really appreciate Shakespeare till you've read him in the original Klingon." And then one of the Klingons says, "To be or not to be" in Klingon. Because of that joke, sort of a throwaway line in that movie, the members of the Klingon Language Institute figured, well, if Shakespeare was originally written in Klingon, then we owe it to the galaxy, to the universe, not to translate, but to restore all the works of Shakespeare back to the original Klingon. And they started with Hamlet. In Klingon, there's only about 2,000 words, which is a very small vocabulary. But again, they didn't create any new words when they translated Hamlet. They just used the words that were there in a very clever way. The Shakespeare version of Hamlet, where he writes in prose, are in prose in Klingon. And the parts where Shakespeare wrote in poetry are in iambic pentameter in Klingon. They followed it perfectly. They altered the story a little bit, so it doesn't take place in Denmark. It takes place on the Klingon homeworld and so on. So the cultural references are different.
Okay. And can you tell me how to say until next time or goodbye in Klingon?
You would not say goodbye. Klingons don't say that. What they would do is they would just turn around and walk out of the room. That's what they would do. That's Klingon culture. For a long time, there was no way to say hello either. But when I was working on the film, the crew would come up to me. And by crew, I don't mean the crew of the Enterprise or the crew of the Klingon ship, but the movie-making crew, you know, from time to time, and say, "Oh, you're the language guy. You met up Klingon." "Yeah. Say something in Klingon." And I'd say, "What should I say?" And they would say, "Say hello. Say how are you?" And I'd say, "Oh, a Klingon would never say that." And they go, "Ha, ha, ha," and go away. I got tired of giving that as an answer. So I made up a greeting, which is Duknech, which literally means something like, "What do you want?" But that's about as polite as the Klingons get. They're kind of a crude culture.
Would they say something immediately before leaving the room?
No. And just get up and go.
Okay.
They might say, well, they're going out on a mission or something like that. They might be sent off on a mission. And then whoever's sending them off would probably say to them, "Kapla," which has become the most well-known Klingon word, I think. That means success.
Mark Okrand, inventor of the Klingon language, in the ABC studio in Washington, D.C. In the third in this four-part series on constructed languages, I'll be exploring two dystopian Englishes in literature: Nadsat in A Clockwork Orange, and the language used by the 12-year-old protagonist of the far-flung future England of Ridley Walker. I'm Prithvi Varatharajan for Lingua Franca at abc.net.au/rn.